NFL Sunday Ticket is now on YouTube and YouTube TV, which means that you can stay close to your team even if you don't live in their town. Like, maybe you're a Raven who married a Seahawk who got a job in the land of the Falcons. With NFL Sunday Ticket, you can watch your team's out-of-market Sunday afternoon games no matter where you live, because you shouldn't have to change teams even if you change towns. NFL Sunday Ticket, now on YouTube and YouTube TV. Go to youtube.com/presale to get $50 off.
Terms and embargoes apply. Offer ends 9/19. No refund. Subscription auto renews.
Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard. And I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Go ahead, break it down. Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
Big moment for the grad cricketer here. And let's do it correctly. Let's start with the numbers. 69 tests, tick over 4,000 runs, high score 199, average of 40, 10 hundreds, 21 fifties, 143 ODIs, 5,507 runs at 47.5, 12 tons, 35 fifties, 50 T20Is, 1,500 runs there or thereabouts, highs of 119 at 35.5, 110 fifties, nearly 3,500 runs in the IPL so far from 116 matches at 35, 25 fifties there. This is an all-time white whale capture for the grade cricketer. It's one of the all-time cricketers, the bane of many an Aussie's existence, witness to some of the all-time moments in Australian cricket at least and world cricket, a guy we would have loved to have on our side. And he almost played for England, but we'll talk about that. He's nailed it at test level, nailed it at ODI level, T20 level, and the rig level, especially as we look down the barrel of the camera at just an absolute, it's a rigosaurus. He may not realize it, but he's been asked onto the show about 8 times before he started following us. So I think we just ended up in the DM requests there. But finally, we've cracked through. Also, he has a book out at the moment that is an unbelievably good read on several levels. So it is an honor to say g'day finally to Fuff Du Plessis. Fuff, welcome to the Grade Cricketer, mate.
Sure, guys. Thank you so much for having me. First of all, I just want to apologize for not getting back on the DMs. It is a process to get through. They get lost in translation a little bit. I think hopefully Instagram can come up with some sort of thing where people like yourself can make a noise every time it comes through in your inbox because you don't miss those messages. But your show is awesome. I have actually been watching it for a very long time. So you guys are awesome. I love it. You'd probably say you're the funniest cricket show that ever existed. So well done. Kudos to you guys. And good to see you. I was just complimenting you on your cool jacket there. I mean, Tom Cruise would be happy to see you. Maverick 2.0 sitting in the studio there.
Yeah, I mean,
well, that's it. We're done. Well, that's actually the end of the interview. That's and the show.
It's going to mean a lot to you guys, I think, after this, and to a lot of people, that the first thing that happened when we got onto this call was you just immediately looked at Higo's jacket and you just said, "Nice bomber jacket, brother. That's some Maverick stuff." So
that will mean a lot to a lot of other people. Yeah, right?
I'm kind of nervous to say this bit because when we were talking about setting up this chat, I promised to you that I would read the entirety of your book, but it is 500 pages on Kindle. I'm illiterate. No, but
I'm very illiterate. So I mean I try to make a book to read for people like us. If I could, I'd make it 500 pages of pictures. But unfortunately, we had to do some writing in it for the people who enjoys reading.
Hey, the writing is lively, Faf. Like, I was just going to say, I'm nervous because reading the initial passages of the book, like you're a person who has done a lot of reflection on your personality. You've reckoned with your personality. You're almost clinical in your analysis of who you have been in the past and who you are now. And it's a really compelling journey to kind of read about a guy that has, like, you know, you're probably you're very I guess you concentrated a lot on cricket, but you were rough around the edges. You contrast yourself with AB de Villiers, your best mate, who you meet in high school. That's a good school team, I'd imagine. But I wanted to kick off with, like, where you actually start the book. You start it with a characterization and contrast of your mum and your dad. You know, your dad is a drill sergeant. Your mum's very sensitive and caring and attuned to your needs. Your dad's a hard rugby player, but gave it up at 28 and he was hard on you with cricket and stuff. I just, I wanted to know why you chose to start your book there with parents and with dad stuff.
Yeah, so I think the context of the earlier bit of your question was when I sat down with this process on the book, two really important things needed to come across if I was going to do this book. And that was to be very, very, very honest and also vulnerable are the two things that really means a lot to me. I think, especially through leadership within the national team, I think those two things were always something that I want to make sure was always at the forefront of that. So, and when you do that, you have to go into some topics that is a little bit hard to speak about, but it was the only way that I could really go there. So initially when it started in lockdown and I was like, fuck, okay, you're going to do this book now, but if you're going to do it, you're going to have to do it in this way. And can you do it in this way? And the first answer was like a yes, like a soft yes. But then it was like, no, the conviction of doing this in the way that you have to do it in the way that you need to do it. So, and then once again, that vulnerability and that honesty has to be at myself first. Like I have to point the finger at myself. And I think I do that right through the book. The person that gets, you know, that mirror hold up in front of him is myself right throughout the book. So never at any stage am I throwing stones or judging people. It's all just this journey of what it did to me in terms of my growth as a person or in leadership or in relationships. So the point of the starting of the book is obviously, I think most parents ask this question, like how hard do you push, especially boys, I assume, you know, with sports and dads and stuff like that. And I think from my story, certainly my parents was divorced early on and my dad was this almost like Tiger Woods-esque, you know, kind of dad that was just pushing zero empathy. You know, I mean, there's a few stories I write in the book to just explain the zero empathy rule. And then on the other side, I had my mom. So I think the balance of the two complemented each other really nicely. But I think if you look right through my career, that hard that my dad pushed me towards would have definitely shown up in so many occasions right throughout my career. You know, I mean, it was really tough. I find that I was at my best against the opposition that was the most toughest, obviously Australia. There would be something in me that would just respond to this hardness about it. So I think, yeah, I'd have to start there to give people the context of what would follow after that.
And so much of the book, Faf, is about relationships, and it's less so about, you know, your higher scores and the achievements and stuff. It's so much about relationships. So I guess to that end, like, what do you think it is about cricket where everyone appears to be an absolute fuckwit?
Yeah. So once again, the starting of the book was, what are you going to write about? What's your story you want to tell? And it was actually cricket was like number 7 or number 8. In the queue of things that I felt real, something that I could say that could add value. And as you mentioned there, relationships and culture and leadership were the three things that I'm really passionate about and very lucky to have walked the journey in the South African team where you work with so many different cultures. So that was awesome. And then I think cricket in general, I mean, when we started playing, you guys would know 10, 12, 15 years ago, cricket was a lot different than it is now. So you never played with guys in the same team. You always just had almost like we're going to war against Australia or England or India. It's like this, that's all you knew really, right? So that's why cricket was so fiery back then. It was, you know, get the gloves out every time you walk out onto the pitch. But that was great. That's the way we played the game. And I absolutely love that about especially playing against Australia. Because when I was a kid, I was waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning watching Australia versus South Africa and Shane Warne absolutely cleaning Daryl Cullinan every time he gets the ball in his hands. You're like, I can't wait to be in that situation one day. But then obviously IPL started happening. People started playing with each other a little bit more. Then you go, actually, he's not that bad. You know, when I played against him, he was, but now playing with him, there's a other side of him that I can see. And then you obviously get the odd personnel that probably stays exactly what you thought before.
Well, you mentioned Daryl Cullen, and we had a lot of fun with one of the great anecdotes you tell in your book, and I think it's been serialized, so I don't feel like I'm giving away too much when I, and I think a lot of the audience will be familiar with this now, but the story you tell about sitting down with Daryl Cullen, and the teams have merged, the coach has got you in, you're with your hero, you're kind of starstruck. I thought, in terms of narrative, you set it up beautifully. You know, you're there with eyes rolling back in your head and stuff like that. But, yeah. And, yeah. You know, he tells you to go and sit in the fucking bar. there's a serious side to it. We laugh as a kind of
the absurd. Well, everyone in the chat room did laugh that day. That's for sure. Right.
Whoa. Well, he's like, if he's like, because you mentioned before, you know, you have transcended or like walked in both worlds of the old school cricket and the new school now as well. And like Daryl Cullen, and let's say he's a symbol of kind of old school South African cricket, you know, like, could you characterize for us what it was like to walk in? What did South African cricket used to be like? I mean, we can talk about Australian cricket all day. Yeah. It's not like it's casting stones, but what was the old South African cricket like?
I think it would be exactly the same. Back then, culturally, you had the senior players and junior players. You had to earn your stripes. I mean, you know, I came from a school where respect was everything. So, like, when I walk into a room full of older people, it's, you know, good morning, sir. And even, like, Daryl would be a sir to me. He wouldn't be on my level back then. I would be the guy that would be packing the kit bags at the airport for the older players, because that was just what it was like. And there was no complaints. We would get on with it and almost like find our voice within the team. But yeah, the story about Daryl is I tell the story about him, but it's very much about how important a lesson it was to me. And I mean, I speak in the book of going from hero to zero in the space of 5 minutes, but it's a lesson for me that for the rest of my career, the importance my words had to younger players. And now obviously culturally we've changed, all of us, I assume in Australia as well, people are a lot more, you know, on the same level. There's no more juniors and senior players. So I think it's just culturally, it's naturally evolved. But Daryl wasn't very happy when he read that.
Yeah, I bet. That's what I was going to ask you, actually, because when you're writing a book like this and you're telling these stories from your experience, right, you know, you have to sort of burn guys a bit. I know you talk about your relationship with Mark Boucher when he was a coach, right? It was different to when he was a player. But do you have to be like sort of pick your battles a bit about who you want to speak about or who you're happy to burn a bridge with maybe? Or do you have to, when you write this, do you have to go and tell Mark Boucher or Graeme Smith or Daryl Cullen, like, I'm writing this stuff about you. Are you going to be okay with that?
Yeah, so that's a very good question, because that is the process. The process is a difficult one, because I think the easiest way to do that is not to do it at all, because it's, you can almost just scrape through things a little bit without going into things. And once again, the only way that I could really do this and be true to myself is if I was honest in what it was like for me, in my perspective, or my journey. So then you have to go into one of two things that are harder to speak about, because you do feel like it's not what someone would necessarily want to read. But the intention of it for me was always never to throw people under the bus, but it is actually just telling my truth. So that is a complicated thing to get right, because as I said, you want to be as honest as possible. But you also don't want to, you know, back away from some things that people, what went on there, what happened there. So then I have to go into those stories with a real level of honesty. But I think if you read the context of everything, you will see that right through the book, there's a both perspective. It's not me talking about I'm right, I'm the best. It's like, actually, this is just how I saw things. But also, this my way is not the highway. Like, you just have different leadership styles. And I speak about Boucher in the book as being this amazing cricket coach in the way that he improves you technically. But then I speak about the challenges that we had from a soft skills point of view, which is the opposite of all the, you know, training, be fit, be the best, all those things. So it's just, once again, it's my reflection on the challenges that I had. It's not about throwing him under the bus, because I actually do think he's a very good coach. And I speak about that, you know, 2 years, I was the guy that probably pushed him to be the coach of the national side. And then 2 years later, I asked myself that question, do you think he's still the best coach for the team? And the answer was yes, even to the expense of myself. So I think it's, if you read the context of everything, you'll see that I never try and throw someone under the bus.
But they're not as good as the headlines though, Faf, you know, when you get pressed for the book of just like, just picking out the bits that are dramatic and where you are throwing people under the bus. What was I going to ask? I mean, like when you, I mean, one thing I want to say about the book is that you, on that question of who you decide to criticize and not, is like, without doubt, the person who's criticized most in the book is yourself. You know, and I do think that gives the perfect context to, and I think that's what you're trying to say, the perfect context to criticisms of others is basically that, that I feel like a lot of the book is you really quite in a really ruthless way, like going through your own journey, you know, and really, you really nail yourself at different times. And you talk about there being two yous, you know, you went through a bit of a spiritual transcendence, I think at 29 or something like that, kind of coincided with your commencing test cricket. Can you walk us through that a little bit? You know, like what, how do you reflect on yourself in the past and the old Faf du Plessis and who you are now and how you came to that position?
Yeah. So I think luckily I always had cricket that pulled me back into this discipline of, you know, as all sports stars want to achieve something. You see, you've got this motivation and dedication that you're just pursuing what is going to be your dream. But then I had this other side, which was a little bit, I assume Tom Cruise-esque on the left there, just a little bit looser, you know, that there's a young guy that goes through life. So, and I talk about that journey of like relationally, the mistakes that I made, you know, even as a boyfriend or, you know, with my now wife, going through the process of traveling the world, living the life, and then almost fast forward the story now where your moral compass just gets switched on a little bit more and you become a better version of yourself as a person. And actually how that helps me in so many other levels of leadership and relationships and, you know, husband, father, all those things, there's this evolution of, I suppose, just self-growth. So, and it's through a lot of mistakes. So yeah, it's a lot, lots of context to get there, but I'm trying to give you the fast forward version.
No, of course. You mentioned your wife there. Imari, is that how I say it?
Imari, yes.
Imari. So, okay, pardon me. Can you just tell us a story about how she accidentally met you or when you guys first kind of came into contact? Because I think there's a very good grade cricket kind of context to it. And if you're precise words, I can just actually read it. But it, maybe in your own words, how you guys met, just set it up.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. That is the perfect grade cricketer story, isn't it? Because that's, for us, that's club cricket in South Africa, which is similar, like, you know, the boys are just there playing. The main thing is having a couple of beers after the game. Like, that's why 85% of the players there play cricket. And then you have the 15% or maybe 5% that wants to be professional cricket players. So we were playing a club match and I was sitting next, like on the side of the boundary waiting to go bat. And had my helmet on and had my like tunnel vision on, preparing, getting ready to bat. And I was like, who's that there sitting on the grass embankments there? So I just stared her down for a little bit, you know, tried the old blue eyes and trying to get that going. And then a wicket fell out to go in and bat and batted well and finished the game and walked off the field. And she was still there. And we walked into the dressing room afterwards. And I was like, okay, guys, fines meeting. Yes, let's go. Everyone get the beers, get it ready. But do you mind? I just want to go and ask someone if she can maybe come and help us pour the drinks, like in the fines meeting. So I walked over and I was like, listen, would you mind like coming into? But as I most often do, I was often shirtless when I did this. So it was like, come pour some drinks. And I'm sitting there in the change room and we're doing the fines meeting. And yeah, it's actually sad that it's now my wife, because it sounds like it is possibly someone that you wouldn't think the story would finish, that it would become your wife.
Well, I just think to round it out, to give a flavor of the book, if you don't mind, the way you describe it is, after the match, our coach, Grant Morgan, invited her and a few other students into the change room. So you've actually changed the story there. since he needed people to pour our beers for the fun.
It sounds better when I'm walking across, doesn't it?
A naive 18-year-old farm girl from Northwest Province, she walked into a room full of men getting ready to shower. But first there was a fines meeting, and once that started, she couldn't leave. So she just kept her eyes on the plastic cups she was asked to fill. And then you go on to say, players would usually sit through a fines meeting in their cricket clothes, but I always took my shirt off the moment I got back into the changing room. When I noticed that there were girls in the changing room, I decided to parade in just my ski pants. Her interpretation may be different, but I believe it was my peacocking that immediately drew her to me. I think that's glorious.
I'm sure that's someone else's book. That doesn't sound like me at all.
Well, for my highlight of perhaps your entire career in the book itself, I mean, let's talk about your first test match, Faf, where you scored 110 red against the Aussies. How many balls? Do you remember how many balls?
400 and something. I don't remember exactly. No.
Always round up. 376. 70, that's right.
78 first dig too.
That's right. 78 first dig. But I mean, you must have heard some unbelievable abuse in that first innings. So I'll ask you about that. But then secondly, so Mike Hussey's playing that game and you two have played together at the Super Kings at Chennai, and he gives you a bottle of wine. He gives you a bottle of wine before.
Waits after the celebrations as well.
Right, right. And he gives you a bottle of wine celebrating your debuting into the Test arena. And you think of how great a gesture that is. And you speak about it even after all this time, it's still such a great gesture. Obviously, the Aussie boys got wind of that. And then when you've come out to bat, someone's called out, "Hey, Huss, here's your best mate again. Why don't you suck him off?"
That story is a very good one.
Did you hear that and think like, oh, that's just how they all talk to each other? That's just how they talk to each other. Like, did it sort of calm your nerves at all?
Yeah.
And did he?
I mean, so the
off?
First part of the question was like the chirping. The context of that once again, my debut test walking down, and in the book I describe as my heel of my foot just clipping out of my shoe, and as one tried to do, you try to kick your shoe back into place, and it feels like you're living your worst nightmare because your shoe doesn't want to get back in. So I decided to crouch in the middle of what then was walking down the Adelaide change room, and just the barrage of abuse that was flying on my debut. And I was like, wow, this is intense. I mean, it cannot go any worse than that. So I walked on the field. I was like, fuck, you got a shocker here. Just, it will go better, like that conversation with yourself. But anyway, I was surprised that Huss came in after that that day. I never expected him to come in, because obviously now you're playing against each other, and it was that culture that we spoke about. It was very different back then. But yeah, I knocked on the door and asked if I can come to the door, and he was with this bottle of Penfolds. And I was like, well, first of all, Mr. Cricket is here, and that's already like the best thing that can happen. Now he's got a bottle of Penfolds with a message on to say, like, mate, congrats, this is a special day, you'll remember this forever, I'm very proud of you. And I was like, what is this? Is the best gift I've ever received in my life. So the next day in the press conference, I just wanted to honor Mike Hussey for being the best gift giver that I've ever experienced. So I walk into a press conference and I go, guys, you would not believe Mike Hussey is an absolute legend. So I think his stocks in South Africa because of this story went up a thousandfold, because everyone is like, wow, Mike Hussey. But then his stocks within the Australian cricket team went down a little bit, because I walked out and I was like, this is amazing because they're not abusing me anymore. They're abusing us. So I was like, this is great.
You know, like sometimes you can tell a story about an Australian sledging someone, and maybe in the style of the sledge leads you to have some clue as to who it was. But I can honestly say I would not have any idea who that was, because I could imagine 10 or 11 of them saying that. You know what I mean? Like, but Fafi,
yeah, I do think I can remember. I think it was from the slip cordon somewhere, because Mars was also always a gully.
Yeah.
So I think it might have been in the slip cordon. And I don't want to throw Shane Watson under the bus, because he is one of my best mates outside of the game of cricket. But he would be one of those guys that you played against and you go, and then when you play with him, you go, oh my word, this is one of the most genuine, kindest, amazing people out there. And I mean, since playing with him at CSK, we've become really good friends.
How many slips were there?
So Ricky Ponting was still playing. I think he was at second. And then Shane Watson would have been at first. And there would have been one more. I can't remember the third slip.
Okay. Surely it had to be the wicketkeeper, didn't it? It had to be Haddon.
It was Haddon.
Yeah, it would have been Haddon, then, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
The cordon? Yeah. Who feels a third slip in that game is a question. You loved playing against Australia, Faf. You, well, what have we got here? Like, you averaged almost 50 in tests against Australia, 54 in ODIs. So you averaged over 50 when you were playing away out here. You've spoken already about how it just must have tapped into to something within you that brought out the best in you. But there's a quote in here that I think is just so true, and has been true of how to beat Australia, or at least old Australian teams in the past. You said the only way to win against them was to match their aggression in order to neutralize their attempts at bullying you into submission. And I think that feeds into something a lot of people have suspected, which is that, like, you know, the old Aussies, that they didn't like it when they got it back. You know, they liked giving it, but they didn't like getting it back. Like, how did you come to that realization and then find the balls, I guess, to do it?
I think just experience. So there wasn't necessarily something that was said to that level of we need to do this. But certainly through experience, I found that every single time we were just a little bit sit back and we're just going to play, every single time we were in that space, Australia beat us. Like, it was just, it became so obvious. And I reference, I think in the book I speak about in Sandpiper Gate, the first test, where it was that almost that perfect blueprint of how Australia will beat you. They just, it feels like they're just men and you, like, not at their level, because you're just not, you're not up to the task in the way that they chirp you, or the body language, or the intensity that they play at. And then once again, that realization where you go, guys, this is not going to work for us. If we're going to play like this, then we will get bullied. And rightly so. That's the way that whatever edge you can have as a team, you must definitely use it. And that's, I felt from experience, like, if you couldn't match that from a personal level or a team level, then you would get, you'd almost get lost for 3-0, 4-0, 5-0. I mean, we've seen it so many times when an Aussie team is on and they, like Ashes, I think when the English team come there, it's like this dominant display of just, you feel like you're not getting anywhere as a team. So yeah, then as a captain and a team, then you go, okay, all right, this, we need to change this. We need to stand up here and fight fire with fire. And I talk about AB in the book, someone that it's so uncharacter-like for AB to be like that. But he also, from the first test, had a little bit of fire in his belly, because I don't know if you remember Nathan Lyon dropping the ball on him and, like, everyone running past him. And he was a little bit embarrassed in a way, I would say, like, how that all happened. So it was very easy to then just light that flame. But the way that we matched it then in the next few tests was unbelievable. But obviously, Sandpaper Gate, I don't know if you're there yet in the book, but it is.
I got that chapter in. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. I think, I mean, without the other stuff, I think it's the best chapter in the book, because there's so much. There's, like, drama, there's humor and comedy. There's a lot of action. There's even borderline nudity there with the towel and stuff like that, you know. So it's just, it's like this Netflix drama that needs to be played out so people can experience exactly that series that we were all so lucky to be a part of.
All right, well, we're there now. I'll give you the first words on it, Faf. And firstly, thank you, because thank some you. Of your actions were very yeah. much propelled yeah. And yeah. was a tipping point yeah. for our business,
yeah.
Genuinely. Yeah. So just a thanks for that. But let's just start from the top. Warner de Kock, they're walking off the field. Take it away. Just in your own words.
Yeah, so when I wasn't on the field, obviously, I was already out. But there was there's a lot of words said that day. And walking off the field, asked Quinny what was said. And I said, I describe it in the book. And he goes, obviously, but the Warner and the Cock thing off the field was very loud. I
was having a tub, right? You're just in there.
Doing some push-ups, I think.
You're in a tub.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was after my 5 minutes grace of throwing your toys when you're out and you're emotionally angry. So I'm like, I'm going to walk to the shower now. I'm calm. I'm just going to have a nice shower and come back and support the team. So I'm showering and I'm hearing like a voice that sounds familiar and a lot of swearing. And I'm like, what's going on? Yeah. So out the shower, just the old low towel around the waist, and then just beeline straight outside. Obviously then to see the whole Australian cricket team walking up the stairs. And I was like, well, this is fight or flight mode, isn't it? You're not going to now, you're here now already, and you have to protect. At that stage, it was Quinny. So I remember Davey walking up the stairs and I was like, okay, this is not on. You can't talk like that, Quinny. So then I remember Tim Payne trying to just be the mediator that he is, the nice guy, in terms of making sure that everything is just calm and nothing, no one throws any punches. But when I'm looking back on that video, I go, how would this have played out if actually there was a little bit of a rumble in the jungle there? And like, because I've got one hand on my towel, as one does, because it's not, I don't know. I mean, when you tie the towel around your waist,
yeah, it'll stay
there, but it's a low towel. You have to hold on to it with one hand. So I was like, how is this going to play out? I mean, that would have broken the internet, wouldn't it? If there was a fight mid-drop towel, and then what do you do? Do you keep fighting? Do you go back in? So I think that was the humor side of cricket that is awesome to see. Like that there's this something else that people want to also see. And I think that was amazing to see. Obviously, it was a serious situation that had a little bit of humor and lightness to it. But then, actually, I don't know if you remember, but the funniest guy was Lungi Ngiri, because he's a unit, right? He's a big guy. And he was going off the field. He was going to do some run-through bowls. So he was the first guy almost at the crime scene. And he just got there and, like, stood against the wall. And then the Australian team came up and there was a swearing. So I'm there. And then Rabada comes out, and Rabada he's a guy that you would want in your corner every day when it's going to kick off. But Lungi just gets the old freeze on and just stands like, please don't say anything to me. Please don't. We like Lungi afterwards, like, Lungi, you're the biggest guy in the team. What's wrong with you? Like, get stuck in there. Like, get your juices flowing.
It is without question the most alpha moment I've ever seen of all time. And don't you reckon, Fap, it's really weird how no one's reverse swung it since that day? That's really weird, isn't it?
Yeah, reversing the old art of cricket, that is the... I mean, I throw no stones. Like, I actually speak about it in the book of the... like Sandpaper Gate, how extreme it was for the Aussie cricketers. I mean, if you had to take the guys before, myself included, that did exactly the same thing, that was never that harshly dealt with. So, you know, going through a process where I really felt sorry for the guys going through it. I speak about Cameron Bancroft and feeling like it's almost identical what we went through you know, I was 4 or 5 tests in, and a similar thing happened to me. So yeah, I really felt sorry for the guys there. But I mean, yeah, the old, I joke about it in the book, but the fact that Zips was removed from trousers because of me, and then also Mints and Jelly Babies was removed from the game also because of me. So I don't think that's something to be too proud of. But then fast forward, reverse swing is this beautiful thing that needs to be in cricket, because I think it's the, as a bowler, it's the best thing to face, because only a certain amount of bowlers can really expose the art of reverse swing. And I think Stark is one of the best. I remember like him absolutely cleaning us up. But then now the game has evolved so much with all the cameras. Like, it's just, and even the rules with the reverse swing now, like, you're not allowed to bounce the ball in on the square as much anymore. So I think only the really dry pitches in the world now will see reverse swing still play a part. But I think it's sad, because it's a great, I think if you're a cricket tragic like we all are, reverse swingers, you almost like sit there, get the popcorn ready, and then, okay, right, Dale Steyn has now got the ball in his hand and it's going to start reverse swinging.
With sandpaper gate, Fafa, you know, there's so much conversation and conjecture about what it would have been like to be a fly on the wall in the Australian team. I want to know what it would be like to be a fly on the wall in the South African team when that was going down. Oh. It had to have been funny, like, without knowing what was about to come after that some way. And also a fly on the wall in the South African teams with Zipper Gate and Mint Gate as well. I mean, obviously, we take it as read that only you knew how that was going on, right? None of the bowlers would have known that your methods that were being used. They just got the ball, right? And they just did. Yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah. This is where my spider senses goes on. This feels like a trick question, but I'll try and work my way through it. So.
The old art of reverse swing, and how the way it works is that one person knows how it's working or two, but bowlers just get what they're given and then they just sort of go about it. They just go, yeah, look, it's ready to go, but we don't really know anything else.
So, I mean, that's good skill, isn't it? But I think Mint, especially Mint Gate for us, like being a fly on the wall was, honestly, we, like I speak about in the book, we thought it was an April Fool's joke, because we beat Australia that day and nothing was said. And the next day I woke up and there was a bit of noise around everything. Australia is a brutal place when it comes to the media, isn't it? Like if someone gets the old telescope on them, then you need to be ready for what comes next. So we didn't like think that there would be too much that comes from it, but it almost just grew into this beast almost, like, and it was like to the point of where it was like you were in trouble because of it wasn't the most how do you describe it? I wasn't trying to do hide what I was doing. It was the old like tongue out, slap your finger on your mint, and then you start shining the ball. So it was a very obvious way of doing it. But then afterwards we were sitting in the dressing room and I speak about in the book where Steve Smith comes on in a press conference and they ask him, like, what do you think should be happening to him? He's like, look, we also shine the ball. We also use stuff on our mints. And that was a wow moment for, I think, respect within the dressing room of the South African cricket team. You talk about a fly in the wall there. That was like, well done, bro. You didn't have to say that. That takes a lot of courage, because as cricketers, that is just part and parcel of the game. For us anyway, it's not seen as something that is trying to do anything wrong. But then I also speak about in the book of when it happened, the same, there was another press conference that where David Warner was talking about it. And he was like, no, we never do it. We never get involved with anything. And the same fly on the wall then in the dressing room was like, oof. That's interesting. I think the wheel will turn one day, because it felt like it was this almost like glass house. So the feeling within the South African dressing room was like, okay, next time we get an opportunity, we're going to get stuck into this, because this is not so cool. So the difference is there. And that's why I think fast forward with Sandpiper Gate, the first guy that I messaged was Smudger, Steve Smith, to say, listen, I'm so sorry you're going through this, because you know, I've gone through it as well, and it's bad, it's shit, it's not going to be nice. For the next week, your character is going to get smashed. But just hang in there, like, this too shall pass, almost. But I mean, I didn't know at the time that his season of pain would be a year, because I mean, he went through a year of that, where I just went through a week of that. So yeah, I really felt sorry for him in that instance.
You also spoke about the semi-final loss to New Zealand in New Zealand in 2015, right? And how deeply that affected the team and also you as a person. And then I just wonder, when you see the current team, you know, go out to the Netherlands in the way they did, and, you know, in my view, you should still be playing for South Africa. I know you wanted to do that for a period of time anyway. So I wonder if that still is a triggering in some way. I know South Africa have this, you know, this lineage of chokes or whatever in World Cups, and it's I'm sure difficult. But you know, when you see that against the Netherlands, for instance, and it's happened again to South Africa, does that trigger you in some way of like, I am having to relive my own experience in 2015 as an example?
Yeah, good question. I think, and I speak about it as every time we go to a World Cup, it's new personnel always. Mostly there'll be three or four guys that's been there before. But the general feeling you have as a new guy coming into the team is that this is not part of me. This is not my story. Like, this happened in the past. It's got nothing to do with me. So I'm going to take this on as best as I can. And if we play well, we'll have a good chance of winning. And I speak about 2015 as going with that exact same thing. And it actually goes really well for me in the World Cup in terms of performances. But then there's this line in the sand moment where you can feel pressure at a different level, because it's almost like it's this thing that you are aware of subconsciously at the back of your mind that's there, but you don't want to talk about it. Like, it's this thing that, let's just not go there. And yeah, the run up to myself and AB, then when you feel the opposition goes, right, you guys are choking now. This is what's happening now. You're gonna completely fall apart. And then that feeling of, wow, is this what's happening now? Is this what choking feels like, at least? And then you feel the weight of it on your shoulders. And that's a terrible place for a sportsman to be, because now you're in the past, you're in the future. The last thing you're doing is concentrating on what's right in front of you. So I think, once again, that was a really nice moment for me to go through, because I realized that from a pressure point of view, at least, I felt like that was the most extreme that I've ever felt in my life. But I was still okay after that. Like no one died. Like, I was still I could still perform. Like, that was going to be the worst in my career. So I saw that as an opportunity, almost like to pivot from a personal level, at least. But I think from a team perspective, we've tried all the approaches. We've tried, you know, talking about it, not talking about it, the whole psychological element about it. But I think it's just one of those things. And I think the All Blacks went through a similar thing where they were the best team for a long time, but they couldn't win World Cup. So it's only when you win your first one that you will really have that, I suppose, monkey off your back pressure kind of feeling that we had. So, I mean, the way that we played this World Cup was unbelievable. I don't think we missed a beat the whole campaign. No, we were unbelievable. And then obviously the rain against Zimbabwe wasn't great. So that almost keeps you don't have the luxury to slip up. But then against Netherlands, yes, everyone expects South Africa to beat Netherlands. But also, this World Cup was one where there was a few upsets. I think the margins are closing in on people thinking that you can just walk into a World Cup and beat any team. So Netherlands played very good cricket, but yes, South Africa should have been better on that day, and we know it. Myself as a fan sitting now go, you know, we missed an opportunity there. But it's almost just the same thing over and over again. So that will be, yeah, it will be our biggest challenge. That is something we would have to overcome to get through it.
Well, one upside from the World Cup, Demons though, Faf, is that you lift the lid on the Kiwis and their skeletons, you know, like you know, that they're the nice guys of world cricket. And but your words are, And I quote, that the level of abuse and aggression directed at me was worse than anything I'd ever experienced in relation to 2011, playing against him in 2011 and Brendan McCullum absolutely giving it to you. So like, can Australians feel good that they're not even the owners of the worst abuse that you've experienced in cricket?
Yeah, no, they can. I mean, my most favourable or memorable moments is always the battle against Australia, and I love that. But that experience in 2011 was insane. Like, that was pre stump mics being turned up for the fan to hear everything. So there was stump mics that there was next to there, but it was a free for all. So I mean, I speak about in the book is just going into bat, just thinking like, this is going to be any other day when you walk out to bat, and walking out, it was just, whoa, what's going on here? Like, it's just insane what's going on. And yeah, running out AB de Villiers was a crucial moment in the game. And then Kyle Mills was 12th man. He had his little fluorescent Lumo green vest on and came sprinting on the field and just boshed, like, I want to say, bathed the bees in my ear. It was just like, are you not 12th man? Like, what are you even doing on the field? Like, you didn't even be there. And then this, like, group of five or six New Zealanders that was around me, and it was just a free-for-all. And I mean, I speak about it there. It's like the days when you were younger and you were in a scrap after a night out, and this is exactly what it felt like. There were six guys around me. AB de Villiers has walked off the field already. He's almost like turned around a little bit, thinking, okay, I can see what's going on there. I've left my mate there, but I'm too far already to almost come back, so I'm just going to keep walking. And then it's just me standing out there. And then to the point after that where Brendan McCullum he's just hurling it at me, like, all consistently. I'm like, this guy's in so much trouble because there's the stump mic. I can see it. It's there. Like, he's going to be banned for a few games. And then after the game, like, everyone, the whole team gets fined 50% of their match fees. And I'm like, what? I don't even, like, you play the innocent card. I don't even do anything wrong. Like, they were abusing me. I was just standing up for myself. But you obviously not allowed to push someone on a cricket field, which what I did. So, but then afterwards in the IPL, I was sitting with Baz, and I'm like, you guys, no, I'm not, that wasn't cool. Like, and he's like, what are you talking about? Like, that was just a bit of fun. We had a game plan. We're going to target you. You were the young guy on the team. We know that you were the last batter. So we were like, this, you know, you had a bit to say in the press. In the lead up to the match. So you just fired everyone up a little bit. But I was like, how did you get away with all that abuse? Like, you know, he's like, no, you just take your spike and you just scratch it next to the stump mic. And then the umpire, you can't hear anything. So I'm like, well, kudos to you. That's amazing. I'll remember that one moving forward. But yeah, New Zealand probably went to a year later or 2 years later, they just became a completely different team, didn't they? They were this amazing team that you always played against. And for myself, I had to, like, how can I almost get what it's like playing against Australia, almost fake it playing against New Zealand, because now no one is saying something to me. It's all like, how are you doing, Fuff? You're looking good today. Your hair's looking good. Your shirt's, that's a nice fit. Like, I'm like, what's going on? This guy should be saying not these kind of things, but it's obviously like the old, when you're trying to get in someone's head, they must have had some psychologist know exactly how to speak to me, because that was the right way to get me not in my A game.
Well, you're obviously a very strong-willed person, Faf. And to that end, I want to ask you, in the current day, how does someone go into RCB when Virat Kohli is playing at RCB and then you are the new captain? Like, how do you do that? That must take an amazing strength in confidence in yourself and a different form of leadership. I'm sure you've got a good relationship with Virat, but that is amazing where he's playing at RCB, but you're the captain.
How do you out for him? Is it low tower stuff?
Yeah, he's much bigger alpha than me, isn't he? Like, that's the thing, is I think you don't try and compete. Because the ego is the thing that is where peacocks generally clash, isn't it? It's when you, like, the feathers come out and you just want to see, like, who's got the most shiniest feathers in the room. And for me, I think luckily I get that about people and relationships, and especially from a captaincy point of view. Like, you don't try and be that. So I don't try and outshine someone else in the dressing room. I try and build a relationship with someone. So with Vera, that was exactly my point of entry. You know, I played against him for so long. And he's one of the most competitive guys in the world of cricket to play against. Like, you sit there and you go, this guy, how does he have so much energy every single time a wicket falls? Like, doesn't matter if it's a number 11 or an opening batter or if they're 500 ahead, his passion about celebration is, like, you just have to go, I take my hat off to you. That is, like, the superhuman, because I'm passionate, but when Nathan Lyon gets nicked off at number 11, it's like, okay, let's go and get our kit. Let's get ready to bat. Like, and he's so good with that. So when you play with him, you see this other side, which is also this caring guy that just wants to play cricket and wants to give his best, actually a really family guy. Like, you know, so from a value point of view, you can relate. Also, at that stage, you know, me going through the post-South African era of stepping away from captaincy into a player perspective, I felt there was a connection point for us, because he was going through something similar at the time, being, you know, RCB and India's captain for a very long time. And then you have something that not a lot of people can relate to, but that you can relate with him on that term. So I think that once again gives you a conversation point, which just builds a relationship. But he's amazing, yeah. But definitely, I know I'm proud to call myself an alpha, but he would be a little bit high on the pecking order. The other guy that would be right up there would be Stoin. And we need to talk about Stoin.
What do you want to say? I mean, how does an alpha describe another alpha?
Mm. So Stoin is, I've got so much time for him. So I'll tell you this story. You obviously watch Zoolander, right?
Yes.
Yes. So every time myself and Stoin like sees each other wherever we are in the world, so let's reference IPL, there's just like this eyes locking in moment from a distance and this big smile, and then we slowly walk over to each other and he's like, Rig, and I go, Rig.
Wow.
And then he goes, people don't understand how difficult it is for us to be so good looking. It's like, they don't get it. I mean, and he goes, look at your calves. And I'm like, look at your chest. And he goes, look at your arms. And I go, look at your hair. So it's this is like this romantic alpha. Like, you need to put a love song. I mean, I know Zamps and Stoin are very, very, very close. But there's just this romantic alpha-ness every time when we walk to each other before a match.
Faf, can
you imagine Stoin there with a towel in the dressing room coming out, like on the other side? And it's just this.
We should make it happen.
Yeah,
you know, we should make it happen. A lot of people like to see that.
Hands across the world kind of stuff.
That would bring more people through the gate.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
You know, like NBA, they walk in with all of their different kit on and stuff. What about just walk like the best, the Peacocks walk in with the towel?
Just showing obliques, just the lower ab.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. When you're saying calf there, I thought about something else for a second. Because when you're kicking off. Anyway. Hey, Faf,
we haven't seen that.
One thing I like about it, the chat, is that you have obviously a great contrast between like soft and strong as well. You obviously have done a lot of reflection on yourself, and I think that really comes through with your book. For people who are keen on it, the writing is lively, and you know, there is a lot of balance between excellent stories, of which we've only just touched on a couple, and really good insights into cricket and just personal growth as well. So it's called Faf Through the Fire. Is it actually? I'm looking at this now. Is it Through Fire or Through the Fire, Faf?
Through Fire.
Through Fire. Pardon me. Well, you know, if people type that in, they're actually going to just get the book anyway. But anyway, it's called Fast Through Fire. You can get it anywhere. I think there are different places to get it depending on your country, because FAFSA is a global phenomenon. But mate, thank you so much for joining us and sharing so many of those stories as well. We really appreciate it. It's a big tick for us. We've been looking for it for a long time, and to finish with that story in a story is like icing on the cake. So really appreciate it, mate. Catch you around the traps.
No, thank you so much, guys. I love that. Keep doing the good work. You guys are awesome.